Welcome to the Veterans Voices Podcast, recorded in the Blue Falcon's Nest, a previously undisclosed location somewhere in the recently declassified Cold War era underground bunkers 50 meters below the Lone Star College Montgomery Duck Pond, in front of a live audience of 100 ROTC cadets standing silently at attention. Thanks for joining us. Let's get to it. Welcome to another episode of Veterans Voices Podcast here at Lone Star College Montgomery. Today we have a very special guest with us, Mr. Abraham Sanchez, a veteran of the United States Navy.
Yes, sir.
It's good to have a sailor on board, pun intended. So tell us about why the Navy. Did you look at the other branches, or was it always the Navy for you?
No, actually, I wanted to go Air Force.
Really?
And Air Force was never to be found. Recruiters were never around. Yeah. Even to this day.
Yeah.
My last tour in the Navy was as a recruiter.
Really? Okay.
And
you didn't see them?
By appointment only.
They didn't come to the meetings?
So I guess they must be doing pretty well. So Navy was what I was allowed to do. My mother said no to Army and no to Marines. And I joined at 17.
Right.
So I entered the delay entry program at 17.
Right. So you had to wait. Yeah, you had to get your mother's permission. I did a similar thing, and I don't encourage this. What I did was, I was 17, and they didn't want to sign. My parents didn't want to sign the paperwork.
You forged it.
So I didn't forge it. I might go to prison if I even admit to that. But I told them it was an application for a ROTC scholarship, and they signed it without looking at it. And then I took it down to MEPS and enlisted with.
No, I was very upfront with my mom. She said no to Army, no to Marines. So that left the Navy.
Okay. Does she say why, or can you just imagine?
She just said no, and I wasn't going against her will.
Yeah, I think with parents, I mean, my mother, my whole life was very supportive of everything I did. She was one of those parents that would, like, show up to the high school and, like, bring the ice chest and clean the ice. Like, she was always, everything I was doing, she was in the middle of and helping. But the day I told her I was going to join the Army, is I saw a completely different person. I mean, it was you're not going to be good at that. You're going to be terrible. You're going to hate that. I'm like, who is this person talking to me now? I don't even know this lady. But in retrospect, I think she just didn't want me to get blowed up.
I think that's everybody's concern. Being that my mother was from Dominican Republic, she's used to a different type of Army, a different lifestyle, and she associates the Army from our country, Dominican Republic, to what it is here. So she said no.
Okay.
And I was okay with it. I never thought I was going to be as long in the Navy as I did.
Right. If you got to be a recruiter, you got to be a petty officer, what, first class or second class by then to be a recruiter?
Yeah, but I did it as a chief.
Oh, really? As a chief? Okay. Wow. I didn't know I was in the presence of royalty.
No.
For the non-veterans listening, the Navy chiefs are the royalty of the military, but they're very dangerous because their uniforms look very similar to officers. If you're not in the Navy, you can't tell the difference.
But there is a story behind that.
Oh, there is. Tell us the story.
So, a lot of the junior officers that come into the ship, especially those who are from Annapolis or the Naval Academy.
Right.
They think that they are the best thing since sliced bread to the Navy. They get assigned to a chief, and we teach them the ropes.
Right.
We teach them how to be officers. So in a nutshell, the junior officers from the rank 01 to 03 are under the supervision of a chief.
Okay.
They might not like to admit it.
Right. And for our listeners that aren't paramilitary, the junior officers outrank the chiefs.
Yes.
The chiefs probably have been in the Navy 15, 20 years and got that experience, but the junior officers, like Abraham said, they come out of the Naval Academy or even college ROTC.
Correct.
And does the Navy have another, like a officer candidate school?
They do. There is a lot of different avenues that you could pursue. But a lot of the junior guys that junior come from the Naval Academy.
Okay.
That's the 22-year-old
right,
ready to take over the world.
So they get a they get a chief to mentor them, maybe give them the tough love that they need, not in front of people. I'm sure you.
So it's funny because their title is higher than yours. So I give you an example: a junior officer will be the division officer, but the chief is in charge of the division.
Right.
So he's like the figurehead on the letter. Yeah, you write everything in it.
The officer. And also, the officer is mainly there so that if something goes wrong, that's the one that gets blamed.
Correct.
That's the main point of being there.
No, but you try to teach them the right way and try to teach them the ways of the Navy. As a 22-year-old, you're not going to know what a service member who has done this for 20 years.
It's a part of their education. It's almost like a postgraduate work.
Well, and it's not. It's they are being groomed for a different position. So when you start as a division officer, that's the lowest you could go. I mean, you could do your job. In my case, we dealt with pilots, which is another thing in itself.
Yeah. How do you know if there's a naval aviator at your party?
He's probably talking about it.
Yeah. Exactly.
So the division officer, besides being a pilot, they are great pilots. They are great at what they do. But then come the admin side. The Navy would give you 6 different jobs, one pay. Mm-hmm. So you got to wear all these hats and still perform your primary duty. For these guys would be being pilots. But you got to do the admin, right. Division
so
officer.
So you'll be a pilot, but you might also be like the safety officer. You might also be the public affairs.
Correct. But when you work for a department, we have 5 divisions. The flight deck is one. The hangar bay is the second one. You got maintenance. You got arresting gear. You got fuels. Completely different divisions. And these officers are the one in charge. You might not know anything about fueling, but you're in charge of the division that fuels.
Yeah.
So now you got a chief telling you, hey, sir, look, this is what's going on. This is how we do things. Because eventually you are going to be what they call a bosun. And those are subject matter experts at those fields. Now, very, very seldom do you see people from Naval Academy taking those roles. Those will be for Chief One officers. Chief One officer is a person who has climbed to the rank of chief and then decided to go warrant or go officer. Or LDO, limited duty officers. You get to E6. And you put your package to go in officer without the education. You don't need any education. You are considered to be a subject matter expert in those fields. So air bosun, crash bosun, and all-ray bosun, most of the time are position held by prior enlisted, which we call Mustangs.
Right. The funny thing about Mustangs is, do you know the term? You never know for sure. You never know for sure, but did you ever hear any theories of why they're called Mustangs?
No.
I've heard some good ones. One is that in real life, a Mustang, the horse, is a wild horse running free, and then somebody captures it and then beats all the happiness out of it, trains it to act right, and then brings it back to the ranch. And then, so it's on the ranch, and it used to be a wild horse, but now it's civilized. Then another layer I've heard added to that from somebody else was, and the thing about those Mustang horses on the ranch is you got to keep your eye on them because without any kind of notice, they'll revert to their old ways.
So. There might be some truth to that statement. I have met a lot of good Mustangs.
Yeah.
For the most part, they are great people to work for because they understand.
Right.
So it's one of those officers that made it through the ranks as an enlisted, which is not easy. And then he's an officer. So he understands the struggle of the enlisted folks. And now you got a voice in the war room, which is where the officers, you know, dwell. So I have met a lot of good Mustangs.
Right. That's good. So you're yourself in the Navy, Navy chief. So did you have a couple of different jobs before recruiter?
Yeah. I work on the flight deck. Well, half work in the flight deck, half work in the hangar bay. Depending on what ship you're assigned, dictate the type of job you're doing. So I've been on amphibs, which deploy Marines. That's what we call a helicopter carrier, which carry the helicopters, the Harriers at the time. Now it's the F-35 Lightnings. But the amphibs, I've been on an aircraft carrier, and I'm also a certified firefighter, Department of Defense firefighter. So when I was on shore duty, we were the emergency response for the new pilots learning how to fly.
Okay. Does the Navy have a firefighter school, or do they go to the one at Goodfellow Air Force Base?
Goodfellow Air Force Base.
Oh, wow. Okay. I was talking to a soldier was on my podcast that he did his training at Goodfellow Air Force Base. So
great academy.
Yeah. Small world. Even, you know, you think the military with, you know, million to however many troops we have all in all wouldn't be such a small world, but
we cross train a lot.
Yeah.
And so anything firefighting is Goodfellow. Anything aviation is Pensacola, no matter what branch.
Really? Okay.
So all the pilots learning how to fly, you find them in Pensacola.
Okay. And that's how I know a little bit about the Navy chiefs, is I accidentally saluted one once.
Ooh, did they tell you that? Don't salute me, I work for a living.
Yeah. Yeah. You only salute a Navy chief once.
Yeah.
But to my credit, like I said, the uniforms are similar to a Navy officer. And nobody in the Army basic training, they don't teach you Navy ranks. You learn Navy ranks the hard way.
Yeah, you barely don't see. I don't think you'll see us. Marines will see us a lot. We work close hand in hand with them. Air Force sometimes, but you guys will never see us, I don't think.
It was rare, but I would once in a while. At Goodfellow Air Force Base, I saw some. Now, the worst one was after I had wrongly saluted a chief once. I was walking out to the schoolhouse at Goodfellow Air Force Base, and there was this gaggle of chiefs coming at me.
Oh, that's not good.
And I was like, okay, is there going to be like an officer hidden in this crew?
I was looking
at the collars, I was looking at the caps, I was looking at, and I didn't see, all I saw was the anchors, and I was like, okay, mm-hmm. These are all chiefs. And I said, morning chief, and then I got past them, and they started hollering at me, and I was like, oh no, what did I do? And there, in the middle of them, was probably a 5 foot tall ensign.
Oh, of course.
And this gaggle of probably 6 foot chiefs. So, but, you know, you're a young private and you feel bad about it. But in retrospect, I mean, what were they going to do to me, really?
Nothing.
It's fussing me. So that was a long time in the Navy if you got to chief. How many years was
correct.
That?
Well, I got broken service. So I did 20. I retired July of last year. But I got broken service. I joined June 16, 2001. Right before September 11th.
Wow, yeah.
Got out in January of 2005. Came back in September of 2006.
Okay, well not a big break.
No.
Small break.
And then all the way to July of last year.
Okay. Did the break just not turn out like you anticipated?
No, the grass is never green on the other side.
Yeah.
So I got out. I decided that I wanted to go to college. At this time, I was already married. I had kids, and I wanted to spend more time with the wife and kids.
Yeah.
But little did I know, working full time, going to school full time, I never got to see them, ever.
Yeah.
So I decided, like, look, we're working twice as hard for half the money. I'm joining back in, and she was like, okay, so. Finished that semester. The process coming back in took me almost a year, and then the minute I got a chance to come in, I came in.
All right, and then did the rest of your time.
All right. No, I've been getting out every day. I just put the uniform and come to work. Like, man, today's the day I'm getting out. And yeah. Every time it was time to reenlist, I just reenlisted.
Yeah. Did they at least give you good deals for reenlistment, like a duty assignment you wanted, or
no? Not really. You didn't even get a thank you.
Oh, well.
You got a certificate and keep it pushing.
And it seemed like in the Army, your first reenlistment, maybe your second one, they were always offering you the world, like whatever duty station you want, whatever bonus we can give you. But even in the Army, I noticed when it was people's third or fourth reenlistment, they wouldn't give them much because they're like, "Well, you're stuck with us." You're not
so with us. Being that I have broken service, I did my first tour. It was on a ship, USS Saipan, decommissioned in the Battle of the Ocean somewhere. I did a tour there, got out, came back in, do another tour on USS Kearsarge, a different type of amphib. And by that time, I'm already at 9 years in.
Yeah.
It's already downhill from there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of service members, once they get halfway or close to halfway, they're like, well, why not?
You'd be surprised how fast time flies in the military. And people say, you know, I don't understand how you did 20 years. Like, me neither. I didn't feel it. I mean, it's just, you're always doing something, always busy, always got to be somewhere. We got to deploy here, we got to deploy there. And deployment got longer. The longer I stayed in, the longer the deployments became. So my first deployment in 03 was 6 months. And I thought that was long.
Yeah.
By the time I retired, I did a 10 months, like it was nothing. Then it became normal to do 9 months deployments. And between the workups, the training exercise, the deployment, you're never home. You're always gone. It has its perks, I guess.
So you're retired, but still a young man. That's one of the benefits to a military career.
Yes, sir.
I know folks that are retired at 37, 38 years old, and they start a whole new professional life after that.
I worked with a guy. I used to be a public school teacher who was on his second retirement. He retired from the Army and then became a school teacher, worked another 20 years, retired again. And so what's he by then?
So you're looking at about 60 probably?
Let's see, if he retired at like late 30s, so like late, yeah, so about 60 years old.
Then at 65 you get Social Security.
So, I mean, that's another plus. There's a lot of pros and cons, I guess.
It's not a bad life. I tell kids all the time, it's not about life. You gotta go in with your eyes wide open. At least for the Navy. Right. You know, the Navy's gonna get everything it can out of you.
So why not do the same, right?
That's what I tell them. Get as much as you can out, because the Navy will get everything it can out of you. And it's a win-win situation for everybody. I mean, things has changed for the better, certain aspects. But as a whole, it's not what they paint it out to be. You know, a lot of people tell you, no, my kid is not joining the military, especially when I was a recruiter. My kid is not joining the military. Okay, what are your kid gonna do? Because they make it seem like taboo, like the military is, it's not a bad thing. At least for me, it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it goes to when your kid is the question, you know, do you want them to go into danger? Have your kids looked at the military at all?
Not old enough yet.
Are they talking about it, or is they still too young?
They just do, still too young. If they want to go to the military, after college, they can.
Okay, so you want them to go to college first. Mm-hmm. Would you encourage them to do maybe ROTC in college? Mm-hmm. Or just enlist after?
No, because I want them to go in as officers.
Yeah.
Not enlisted. I don't want them to go through the stuff I went through. Even though it made me a better man than I am now. But if you can go to the military, get that experience without dealing with all the headaches that I dealt with, then yeah.
Yeah, I usually will tell people, you know, a career on the enlisted side is probably not for everybody.
Correct.
It's probably harder. And usually when I do have people ask me, you know, should I join the military, should I not? A lot of times I'll say, well, you know, if you're going to enlist, I would think of it as a short-term character-building exercise to kind of...
Well, it depends, really. Like, something the Navy has done very well. I know the Air Force is pretty good about it, but the Navy now is starting, like, the last 5 years started to catch on. It's doing their training the right way, so it correlates whenever you come into the civilian sector.
Right.
So if you got a job in the Navy, I'll give you an example. As a recruiter, I put my wife's cousin in the Navy. And I gave him the unfiltered truth. He said, Abraham, look, these are the jobs available. And I was like, you're not doing that, that, or that. So we're like, why? You're not doing it. Just, I'm not even going to tell you. You're not doing it. So we settled on a job with IT with a top secret clearance. There are ITs out there. I have an IT who used to work for me. They offer her $96,000 starting. Wow. Just because of the top secret clearance in the civilian sector.
Any college degree there? So just the security clearance and the Navy alone, training?
Correct.
Is the Navy school in Fort Gordon, or is the Navy IT school somewhere else?
It's in Pensacola.
Pensacola, okay.
So there is, he has to go to like almost 2 years of schooling.
Yeah.
Before he set foot on a Navy ship. So his contract is about a 6-year contract. But his training is going to correlate. He could come out and be an IT guy for anybody.
Right. And that's a thing I think a lot of young folks don't think about when they're picking a job in the military is what can I do with this?
Correct.
I mean, in fairness, some people are just young and got to get all the adrenaline out of their system and kick down doors and blow stuff up. But I always tell those people, just don't expect that to pan out after the military. I mean, it's good for, you know, if you're going to run for office later, you have bragging rights, say you were a Marine.
If you make it back.
You were a soldier. Yeah.
That's the whole question.
But otherwise, I think I agree with you. Most of the time, if I have people looking at a career in the military, I push them towards a commission one way or another. Just, it's a better.
And there is nothing wrong with it. My thing is, I lived that life, and I wouldn't want my kids to live that life.
Yeah.
That's it. Now, if my son said, Dad, I'm going, go. And this is the thing that people don't understand. We live in a society these days that looks at the military in a negative manner for the most part. Yet something happens. A lot of people are getting older. And not a lot of people are coming in the military. So who's going to defend one?
Yeah. I wonder how much of the recruiting problem is...
It's a problem.
Is it veterans are talking about their experience? And whereas in the 70s, if the veterans were having a rough time, how did you know? But now it's on the social media.
Recruiting is very hard. It's more stressful than being in the middle of the ocean in the Persian Gulf. Yeah. I'll tell you that right now. It's very hard. And it tells you that it's very hard when the ASVAB standards keep lowering.
Right. And the ASVAB, for listeners, is the... Wait, let me try to remember all the acronyms. Armed Services of Vocational Aptitude Battery. Is that right?
Yeah.
Because another thing, recording the podcast, I've been trying to catch the acronyms for the audience, and then people started quizzing me, like, do you even know? Because sometimes we use the acronyms and we forget what they... We know what they are,
but... Very ingrained.
Like, one guy was going around the barracks one time, like, hey, tomorrow we're going to do physical training, and we were scared, like, what is that? It was just the, you know, PT was what we normally do. But yeah, so the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery Test. So
it's an aptitude test to see where you're at, what you're good at. They lower the standard. Hmm. It was a point where it was at 28 at a time.
Out of 100?
Out of 99.
Jeez.
And they were still struggling to put people in the military.
So I think in my day was the 1994, I took it. You had to get a 70 or higher to be in the Army.
Not anymore.
And I think it was like 50 or higher to be in the Marine Corps.
Not anymore.
It was probably 97 to be in the Air Force.
I want to say 2 years ago, Army was doing 28. Yikes. No high school diploma.
Wow.
That tells you how hurting we are for people.
Yeah, and that's a little worrisome because, you know, who are you going to have?
The quality goes out the window.
Doing the job, yeah.
But if there is nobody volunteering, then you take whoever comes.
And you got to think, is it that young people don't want to serve? Or look at the Air Force, like you said, you couldn't find the recruiters anywhere. So
I mean, they're over. If you score high enough in the high school ASVAB test, the Air Force will reach out to you.
Yeah.
If you score high enough.
But do the other branches need to look harder, not just Air Force recruiting, but the way Air Force treats their people? That kind of thing. And then perhaps if give it 5 years later, the sailors are saying, you know, we got as good as the Air Force now.
Well, yes and no. Air Force has it, the the quality of life in the Air Force is pretty good. Second to none.
And we both saw it on Goodfellow Air Force Base, how they were living.
Yes.
And a lot of the hate for the Air Force, I think, is just jealousy.
Correct. I mean, they are top of the line, everything. I mean, now Space Force might be giving the Air Force a run for their money.
Yeah.
Another conversation for another day. but that's what it is. And I think now people are starting to realize that if you score high enough, okay, the Air Force is going to make contact. But can the Air Force offer you as much opportunities as the other branches would?
Right, and that was the difference for me when I was looking between the branches, is the Air Force wasn't going to guarantee me anything. But the Army was going to put, this is your job in the contract. This is your school in the contract. This will be, everything was in the contract. And the Air Force, I think they're just like, well, join the Air Force and see what happens.
Correct. Yeah, we start sweetening the pot as well. Yeah.
And would the Navy be that way? Could they put certain things in the contract?
Everything is black and white.
Right.
Everything that the recruiter tell you is in the contract. Bonus, promotion, schooling, everything is guaranteed. There is nothing to chance. Now, if you messed it up, you got in trouble somewhere, you...
Oh, yeah, that's on you.
Then everything goes out the window, right? But at the beginning, everything is black and white, ready to rock and roll. This is... It's up to you if you get everything that is on that contract.
Any good sea stories? Some good adventures?
Well, crossing the equators are always good.
Oh, the shellback?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are you surprised I know so much about the Navy?
It's good that you know. Crossing the equator is a ceremony of its own.
Right. Well, tell everybody about that.
So, crossing the equator is when we get to meet King Neptune. King Neptune on a ship is usually the older guy.
Were you ever King Neptune?
No. Okay. It got to be the oldest guy. Okay. And he would have customs and a pitchfork, and we have to go a day of pretty much abuse. Well, back in the day, they call it hazing, but yeah, they won't do that anymore. And it's to gain the approval of King Neptune. The only person who could claim change your name from a polywog to a shellback is King Neptune.
Okay.
So polywogs are the people who has never crossed the equator, ever. Shellback are the one who pass.
So in these ceremonies, does rank matter?
No, at all. I have seen people who've been in the Navy 10 years, 15 years, never crossed the equator. And they get treated just like everybody else, which is fun. So that's kind of a way we get even with them, you know.
there's always a way, and this might not be unique to the military, where the lower ranks have their ways of getting even. The extreme examples, I think, were in Vietnam. They would frag people, but I don't think that's happening anymore.
No.
But I think they do a lot of like figurative. Like, I'll set you up for this failure.
Well, you might get sprayed with a fire hose. That tends to suck. We might wet your rack. So when the ceremony starts, it don't start at 8 o'clock in the morning. We never cross the equator during the day. We cross the equator about 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. From the minute we cross the equator, you'll hear a voice over the loudspeaker or the 3MC telling you, hey, you have entered King Neptune's territory. Somebody speaking like that in pirate voice. And then all hell broke loose after that. Wow. So from like 3 in the morning to about 7 o'clock at night, we just...
That's a long day.
It is a long day. Food is not the same. Eggs might not look yellow. It might look red and green. It's full. You know it's full and it's eatable. It just don't look right.
Yeah.
There is no tables. You get to eat in the floor. Everything is wet. Everything is wet. I mean, you get woken up by... So, if you know anything about firefighting, a 1.5-inch hose puts out about 125 gallons of water per minute. And they open them hoses in the birthing and everything gets soaked. So that's how you wake up. Boots are soaked. Clothes are soaked. The t-shirts, you could paint whatever you want in the t-shirt saying that you're a polywog or you know, shellbacks are the one doing all the mean stuff. You get to build a float, and your float will march in front of King Neptune. And if he like your float and like your chant, he'll pronounce you a shellback.
Anybody have to go back again? Because
you might have to go 2-3 times. Yeah. You definitely might have to go 2-3 times before he lets you in.
That was definitely one thing I was jealous of the Navy, was the deep traditions. I mean, it even goes back before the U.S. Navy. Just
correct.
Those sailing ships from hundreds and hundreds of years ago, it seemed like a lot of the traditions are still around.
Even when we pick up chief, it's different than anybody else. There are Marines and other branches who run the season with us. That's what we call it. So when you pick up chief, it's not you picked up the rank, they pin it on you, welcome. No, it's not like that. You got to earn it. They got to accept you.
It's not like another induction.
6 weeks of pure hell. Because the chiefs are the one introducing you to the mess, or the chief's mess. Nobody else can get in that mess unless you are accepted by the chiefs. And you got to get accepted by everybody. You got to be unanimous. So it's tradition. Tradition is very important to us.
Yeah.
Very good. Important to us.
Yeah. I always like that about the Navy. So yourself, how has your transition to civilian life been? How's your transition to Lone Star been?
Well, I retired in July. I applied to come to Lone Star in July of last year to start, I think, the fall semester. Got a job offer in San Antonio, so I put the college thing on pause so I could go over there.
Right.
It didn't pan out, so I just kind of took a break. Well, like, let me just relax, be a stay-at-home dad for a while.
Yeah.
And then I started getting that itch back, like I need to do something. So I applied to college. So far, so good, I think. And now just recently started working, so it's good.
Yeah. Any advice to other veterans starting college? Did you make some mistakes with, you know, applying for benefits or anything like that?
No, mine was pretty straightforward. Being that I'm a disabled vet, VRE is paying for mine. The vocational rehab is paying mine. So
yeah,
I went that route. Communicate with your counselor will be my advice, but I didn't have any issues. It was just straightforward. Advice for veterans starting college: don't try to be perfect.
Yeah, that's a hard thing, because you're a Navy chief. You're perfect, right? You're an expert of everything. You know everything. Nobody questions you. And then the next day, you're in a different place where
correct.
You're not perfect and you don't know everything, and that's frustrating for a lot of folks, I think, coming out of the military, especially if you're a non-commissioned officer or a chief petty officer or something like that. I think it's hard. So any advice for professors or staff members who have student veterans coming into their class?
I would say get the time to talk to them. That would be My best advice. You know, not all veterans are the same. Not all veterans have been exposed to the same things. Get to know them, and you'll see a different aspect of that veteran. Trust is a big issue for me. I don't give it away.
It's earned in the Navy.
Correct. I'm not giving you anything. But if you get the chance to talk to me, then that bond can start building. So that would be my advice to the professors. Like, hey, get to know them. Get to know where they've been and how things affect them, because we're all different. Well, I mean, we all fall under the same umbrella as a veteran, but we're all different.
Part of what we're trying to do with the podcast is chip away at preconceptions and stereotypes that we're all the same.
I mean, we are all the same. I mean, we could relate in levels that people would not understand. It's funny how you say, hey, I'm a veteran, and you see how I'm a veteran, and we automatically click. It's like we understand, like, the lifestyle. We understand the fellowship. We understand the struggle. We understand what it is to be a veteran. But outside that circle, they don't understand.
Yeah, even though you were Navy and I was Army, we started clicking pretty quick, I think, because of that. So an earlier guest had a good answer to a question, and I hadn't considered her answer before. And I'll ask you the same question.
Why is it so hard for veterans to transition into a different life, whereas other people do it all the time? They'll work at the bank and then go work at the grocery store, or they'll go do this or that. And let me hear yours, and I'll tell you hers first.
Why is it so hard for us? Because of the level of commitment, at least for me. We can't fail. We can't quit. We have to make it work.
Right. Because what happens if you don't succeed at your mission?
Somebody gets hurt.
Yeah.
Or somebody not make it home.
Yeah.
And it's pretty hard to turn that off.
Right.
So, you know, when you say, how is it that people can transition from this to that? The longer you're in the military, the longer the level of commitment is towards that mission. Make sure that your people make it home back with you. Make sure that nobody gets hurt under your watch. Make sure that... So there is a lot of responsibilities that all of a sudden you don't have.
Right.
So how do you change it?
I like what you said. You just can't turn it off.
You can't.
And I remember feeling like I was supposed to be... What's a good example? I was supposed to be taking care of some kids, and then I just left them. That's kind of what I felt like.
You know what is the funny thing is?
What's that?
That's the thing I miss the most about the Navy. My guys.
Yeah.
It's not even about the work. The work is going to get done no matter what. It will always get done. I miss my guys.
Yeah.
And I tell my wife this all the time. She was like, but I thought you wanted to retire. Yeah, I want to retire. But I still miss my guys.
Right. And maybe that's why some of us, in addition to having a hard time letting go, we'll still find something. Like, have you been to the Veterans Room Building A over there?
Mm-hmm.
You'll find that, or you'll find Team Rubicon. I don't know if you've heard of those guys. It's like a bunch of veterans that help out after disasters.
No, I haven't heard.
And or the other organizations, like the American Legion. Like, you don't have people that like used to work at a bank, like hanging out together, like former bank workers of America doing stuff. You don't see them.
It's that common bond. And you just can't find that. You can't find it.
Yeah.
No matter, you know, and that bond is sometimes stronger than when your own family.
Mm-hmm. And your answer was very similar to the one I was thinking of from my first guest.
Her response was that in other jobs, you're not leaving a family when you go. Whereas in the military, you are leaving a family when you go.
You can turn it off. And even now, I've been retired going on 7 months. And my guys still call me.
Well, that's a testament to your mentorship if they're still doing that. If you were a bad chief, they would have deleted your number.
No, yeah, but it's the fact that people still call you and tell you, hey, some of them don't even know you retired. Hey, chief, where you at? Well, I'm retired. What? So they're looking to come back and serve under your tutelage again.
Oh, okay.
So the Navy is very big, yet it's very small. So my community in Air Department, somebody knows you personally or know of you. Think about it. And the Navy's like, I believe the last time I checked was like 800,000 people. But to be that small where 2 out of 3 people know you personally or know of you.
Yeah.
It's pretty big.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That's the thing that people don't understand. That's the thing that you can't explain it to somebody that is not a veteran, because they're not going to get it. How do you have a bond with somebody like that?
Yeah. And those are... I think those are forged on purpose. I don't know if the system is set up on purpose so that when we are in danger, your instinct is to protect the team, protect your troops. But another thing I've thought about talking to other guests is
I think there's a reason they set things up and program us this certain way, but what do you do when you're not there anymore?
That's the question, and that's the struggle. You try to do, now I can only speak for myself. I try to do the best I can to change or make a difference on someone's life. That's why I jump into this opportunity.
Yeah.
First, it cut your email caught my attention by never again volunteer yourself. That I know that for a fact. this sounds like a great opportunity to share.
Yeah.
And make a difference. It might not be my guys, but maybe somebody will listen and it will change their life.
Yeah.
Or change their perspective. And in my stage in life, that's all I could do. Now it's time for me to be a dad and mold my kids how I want them to be. And
yeah, those are your guys now.
Literally.
Yeah, it is good. You got a lot of practice mentoring and forging young minds. And maybe you got a head start on a lot of other dads that start out.
And you get to see it. Like, even now, I have social media to keep up with my guys. And every March, you see them pick up rank. I call them, text message them.
Yeah.
So every time, I'm still keeping tabs on them, seeing their success, and cheering them from the sideline.
Yeah.
Not so much, you know, from the in the game, but from the sideline now.
Yeah, and I'm a little envious of you for that. My active duty ended in 99, so there was really no social media.
Mm-hmm.
And then my National Guard finished in 2002, so there was kind of social media, but like I've lost touch with a lot. But what we did was, when it's social media started getting big, we started looking for each other. And I found a good number of them, but there's still a bunch. I'm still wondering where they're at and how they're doing. And
well, we have... I have friends on social media from my first ship in 2001, and still keep tabs on them. We still talk.
It's great.
Not often, because you know we all got lives, but
yeah.
Something happens, we'll communicate, we talk, we see how everybody's doing. So they tell you that in the military you're going to make long life friends, long lasting friends, and it's true. All my friends are military. And I wouldn't have any other way. It's a different breed. That's all it is. It's just a different breed. And if you gotta sit down and kinda, you know, look back, you're like, man, it is true. We're a different breed. That's it.
Yeah.
It don't make us any better or any worse. You're just different.
And I'm hoping, like you said, coming on the podcast will help people understand a little better. I mean, I don't think they'll ever understand 100%, but at least they can kind of see where we're coming from. So do you have a... What I like to do at the end is give the guest a last word. Do you have any, is there anything you wanted to talk about on the podcast? Something we can do better at Lone Star? And it's not going to be... This isn't a propaganda effort. You know, if there's something we can do better, we definitely want to hear about it. I was a Lone Star College student after the Army, but that was 25 years ago, so things might be different now. Is there something we could do different? I know you gave advice to professors, but maybe just overall to the college system of how we could do better with veterans.
Well, so far, my experience with Lone Star has been great. I don't have any complaints or I don't have any issues, and you know, this is my first semester starting college. So I'm like, I don't think I'm qualified to say, okay, we need to fix this, because I haven't experienced any of that. Everything for me has been really smooth. But I'm also one of those guys who's proactive, always on top of my things.
Yeah.
I don't want nothing go by the wayside. So I don't know. I think they do a great job. At least for me, everything went smooth. A couple of hiccups here and there, but that was expected. And then I started classes on time, and everything is groovy for me, at least.
Okay.
So I don't have anything negative to say.
Okay. Well, it doesn't have to be negative.
Not about that. Well, so, you know, when you look for improvement in something that is not working correctly, for me, everything has been working good.
Okay. So you want to give any shout-outs then, since you don't have any constructive criticism?
I definitely like Sarah Killingsworth. She's really good, really responsive when especially me, when I email her and I need stuff done. Professor Shepherd is great. Dr. Varon is great. My experience with the teachers, my experience with Lone Star has been great. Nothing negative really to say. So far, so good.
All right.
Let's see if my perspective changed when I see my grade.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. So any final thoughts? Did you bring anything you wanted to get on your soapbox for, since you got a microphone? And
soapbox, one thing, and I was talking to a friend about this earlier today, and I know I mentioned it to you. Freedom is not free, and people are not volunteering to go serve this country. It's going to get to a point where we're going to look at each other in the mirror and say, who's going to defend freedom? That's the question that everybody should be asking themselves. I know the world looks cloudy, but that's when courage comes up. And somebody has to stand up and say, hey, I'm willing to defend freedom. I did it for 20 years. You did it. Freedom is not free. And somebody's paying for it as we speak. So, if we know anybody, if college is not for them, talk to a recruiter. They'll gladly take them, because somebody has to defend freedom. And our time has already passed by.
Yeah, we got to hand the baton to somebody.
Hopefully there is somebody to pass it to.
Yeah. Thank you, sir, for coming on to the chief. Thank you, chief. I almost forgot my lesson I learned.
No,
the hard.
You're fine. You're fine.
I appreciate the listeners tuning in again, giving us your time. Hopefully it was valuable. Hopefully you gained some inside knowledge that you hadn't learned before. And hopefully it gives you a new perspective on your student veterans and how you can work with them and work for them.